Jackson gave me the news of a planet far away. And Colonel O'Neill will assemble a team that will try to save the day. Dr. Sam has a master plan and a science attitude. And the Jaffa Tube, he's part of the deal with his trusty Goa'uld. It's just a regular day at Stargate Command, and it might be hard to understand.
Welcome, everyone, to a very special episode of Three Fries Short. If you are watching, you can already see, but we have a very special guest. You know him as Chief Master Sergeant Norman Walter Davis Harriman.
Yeah.
Please welcome all the man of a thousand names, Gary Jones.
Man of a thousand names and one flight suit.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Welcome, that, Gary.
That intro? What the hell? Who put that together? That was hilarious.
Two episodes ago, we interviewed the guy that made our intro song, Aki Burmese. He's my friend from college. He's also in a band called Lake Street Dive. And he made our intro song for us. And it is fire. It's so good.
He was two guests ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you only had that intro with the song and the...
Oh, no. He's had the song for the whole time. But we finally made schedules work for him to actually come on the show. And talk to us. We did a whole episode about tropes in Stargate. It was a really good time. He's a big nerd. He loves Stargate. So it was great to have him on the show.
That was fantastic. Yeah. Opening credits. Graphic. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then it just morphs into the Stargate song and you actually put like words to it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
Yeah.
If that was truly Walter seeing that, like in at the gate, it would be the old, you know, everything's fine until. Yeah. People stop me on the street and they go, you know, the show's been off the air for like a thousand years. And they go, were you the guy in Stargate? And I always go, does this look familiar to you? And I always like hold my hands. Like, you know, not like I'm getting my nails done, but just I'm typing. I always go like this. Go, oh, it is you. It's you. That was Walter's like.
That little thing.
That was my thing. That's how they could tell that I was in the episode and something was about to happen.
Oh, it's the head tilt. Always the head tilt.
It's always the tilt. And then the dog, like, what? You know, the Stargate is already normalized. Like, that's not worthy of a head tilt, right? Now then it just becomes like whatever is coming through. What the hell is that? Like, what is that?
You know, something crazy. Something.
Nell says, ah, yes, the classic Walter manicure scene.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
And speaking of typing, you know, in one of the very first, I think it was around, it must have been in the first episode that I was in, which was the two-parter, where I was saying Chevron when encoded, but the keyboards are like archaic. You know, where the letters are like that high.
Yeah.
It's like click a click a click a click a click. And we did the scene and I was talking while I was typing, trying to like make it look like I knew what I was, you know, that's how you open up a Stargate with a QWERTY keyboard. And the boom guy says to me, okay, we gotta go again because we couldn't hear what you were saying, so you can't type. I'm like, I can't type. They go, well, look like you're typing, but you can't actually touch the keyboard.
So when you were
typing on from every episode since then, if the bottom of the screen was the keyboard, then my hands were like above, you know, keyboard, right there. And it was like, I was always like, oh, looking like I'm, and then I just had to do basically like shoulder acting. After a while, like, Peter DeLuise and I laughed that I stopped typing at all. I would go, like, what are you seeing of me? They go, oh, just your thin shoulders. So I go, okay, and I just sit here and I just go like this. Move my shoulders.
Just shimmy him around a little bit.
Shimmy him around. It's like, oh my God, he's madly typing. Look at this. It's crazy.
You're just like going up and down.
And I just like my hands in my lap doing nothing, probably wearing flip-flops.
That's amazing.
I love it. Yeah. Can you hear my dogs losing their mind right now?
We can.
A little bit. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's happening right now.
They've decided that mommy's trying to work.
They're usually so well behaved.
Oh, my dog is sensing your dog is sensing my placemat here, which is a little
Sarah and Christina both are all about the cats. I'm the dogs.
Most hilarious. And it's linen. It's linen, but it's like, look at that cat. It's like,
so funny. He's seen some days. That cat's seen some stuff.
That cat has seen some days. Rats around here are huge.
It's fantastic.
So Gary, it's been a while since we've reintroduced ourselves on our own podcast. So we thought we would tell you about how all of this came together and why it's a really funny story. we'll go from there. Sarah, you want to start?
Yeah. So my story with Stargate is like my dad watched it when we were growing up. So like it was always there and I was like watching it as episodes aired. But then the pandemic hit, 2020, the dark days, if you will. And I finally downloaded TikTok, which like it was like all these videos were blowing up and I was like, okay, what is this all about? And one thing led to another and I made a video about a Stargate necklace that I had, which I thought was really cool. It kind of blew up and I ended up meeting these fine folks making videos about Stargate, whether it's like commentary or cosplay. And then it led to us making a podcast about it, and here we are 3 years later. So
oh yeah, losing our minds.
Yeah.
Every single day. I in true fashion, I forget. Do I usually go next, Rebecca?
You usually do, yes.
Okay. All right.
I keep you all on the screen in the order for the reason of making everything easy for me to edit.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'll keep it super brief because it's not as delightful as Sarah's introduction to Stargate. So I learned about Stargate actually because you were my boyfriend at the time's favorite character and we would go on drunken benders in my early 20s.
God, I thought you were going to say, because you were my boyfriend.
You were my boyfriend. Yes. What? Surprise. Surprise. Oh, it's me. Okay. No. So we would go out and probably like in my young 20s, we'd go out and like party and then we'd go home and we would just put on Stargate and like, that was like, he was just obsessed with you. So now I'm like, the universe has like made it all come back. Karma's come back to me that now I'm in this podcast with these women. So I, same thing, downloaded TikTok. This all came from TikTok. So the whole, like, if it doesn't make sense at this point. So our podcast name is Three Fries Short, meaning we are crazy. We lost our minds during the pandemic. And it's this callback to us just being three fries short of a happy meal, just losing our minds, just every day, same in and same out, repetition. But my character, so I did some commentary and cosplay, and I always did voiceovers as if I was Walter's coworker. So my name was Athena, and we worked in the gate room together. So I always was in communication with you in my video clips that I did.
Okay.
And that was how I got to know these crazy kids. Wow. And go through it. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Can I ask very quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Why was I your boyfriend's favorite character? Like what?
Yes. So it was the like subliminalness of how like your character was always there. It was always like, okay, is Walter going to be here today? Is Walter going to be not? It was like those like sub parts of the show that always made it so humorous to him because it was always at these like critical times, but it was more off of that knot. Exactly. It was the hell tilt moments, but it was like, he's like, there's such consistency in his character. And wow, it was so fun and entertaining whenever he was there. And I will never forget like this. And it's actually one of my favorite episodes, but when the whole team went to the future and you had to save them by like going through the museum to like get all their stuff back. I don't know. I mean, I could ask him, but I just knew he just always found you to be.
Oh, okay.
It feels like Walter was always this anchor in Stargate.
Yeah.
You know, like no matter what SG-1 was going through or whatever, like Walter is like the steadfast, like constant presence that like made us all feel like good, you know? So
unbelievable. I'm genuinely curious. But I'm also, to be honest, I'm genuinely mystified.
Why?
Because I was just, you know, I was just there, you know, opening and closing the gate. And I've come to like learn since that a lot of people just love the character. And I thought, well, I didn't feel like I did anything particularly outstanding or anything to, because I couldn't, the way they wrote it, I couldn't give Walter a backstory. They didn't make any episodes about me. They, you know, I was either sort of a bit more heavily in an episode or I was not. You know, sometimes I'd go to work and I'd have one line and I'd be there for the day and I'd do my one line and then I'd go home. And I could never equate being like a fan favorite where people would be like, oh my God, Walter. Like I've since come across that. So I've come to accept it. But when I do come across it, I'm like, why? Like, what was it? I do remember telling the fans one time at a convention that I decided at some point that I would treat Walter like Walter's relationship with the Stargate kind of like a mechanic who would put like an oil filter in your car. You show up and you go, yeah, the oil filter, I need an oil change. And I go, okay, what kind of, you know, what is it? And it's like, whether or not it's a Porsche or a Tercel or whatever is like, I can figure that out. Because I was a mechanic. Early on, I just decided, well, maybe that's how I should sort of approach the Walter character, and not because I couldn't say that in my lines, but I thought maybe I'll just kind of act that. So I guess I tried to act it, and maybe I was to a certain degree successful. But I thought, I did think there was no way that Walter, if he's the guy operating the gate, there's no way he's going to go into work every day and go, oh my God, what is that? Let's check it out. Like,
no,
that couldn't be happening. You know, yeah, no. This is your assignment. There's things like time travel, you know, other dimension thing. And you go, oh, I'm sure at the beginning it was like,
whoa.
Okay, well, what do we do here? What are like, I type loudly? No? Okay. So I just changed it to make it seem like the Stargate was sort of part of the landscape and kind of run of the mill to a degree. And I think then that equated to people then seeing me as like an everyman. Like that's the best explanation I can give to you as to why people related to my character, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you pinned it for a moment, but I liked the commentary.
I'll pin it again.
Yeah,
here
you go. Because this probably articulated it better. Like, I couldn't have said it this way, but this is exactly what it is. So for me, Walter was seen as the guy in the SGC lighthouse guiding the SGC team's home. Right. It is that like loyalty space of like truth and reason, like that steadfastness of just everything's going to be all right. You got it.
You can count on Walter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'd think that considering I guided the SG-1 team home on that many missions, you'd think that, you know, I might get a thank you from Teal.
Like,
I ever have any scenes with that guy? No. Did I ever exchange dialogue with him? No.
So did you really never exchange dialogue with Wow. Yeah. I can't remember it.
I exchanged more dialogue with Cliff Simon as Ball.
Yeah.
Did with Teal'c. Swear to God.
Really?
Remember that episode where Ball showed up and he came from Stargate and General O'Neill was busy doing something and they're like, oh my God, Ball's here. And he's like, get down and stall him.
I pulled that clip for Gay Tech 101. I pulled it and it was so fun to watch that scene.
Yeah, just standing there and going, and he's staring at me and he's like, you know, destroyer of the universe. And I'm like, Walter, my flight suit. And I'm like, so how was your flight? Anything good? Like those kinds of lines that I could play. Oh my God, I love that stuff because it's so good. Juxtaposed against who Cliff was, who Ball was, and who Walter was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's just staring at me like, are you kidding me? Like, what? You know? How was your flight? Would you like a sandwich or something? I don't know. It's like trying to make, you know, stall for time. Make Ball feel at home. okay. So it was like stuff like that. But I never talked to Teal'c. And I don't think I had lines with Michael Shanks either.
No,
But I did with Amanda and Richard Dean. So it was weird. It was weird looking back over 10 years, 107 episodes, not a word exchanged with Teal'c.
That's wild because you don't think about it until you really start.
Oh yeah,
trying to remember, and it I'm very familiar with all of the episodes, and no, I can't remember the time.
You can't think of one. Mm-mm. You can't think of a scene that I was in. Mm-mm. In fact,
that's wild.
When I was putting a demo reel together, and they can't be very long. They're like 3 or 4 minutes or whatever, acting reel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it opens up with the demo reel opens up with me in a scene with Jason Momoa. Where you know he's from Atlantis and it's like an Atlantis Stargate crossover, and he and I are in the cafeteria and I'm eating fries and I'm telling him a story of something, you know, and I think it's hilarious and he's just staring at me. So it was in retrospect when I thought, oh, what clips am I going to put? And I went, oh my god, I have a scene with Aquaman. You know,
yes, yeah, like, that's going in.
Pretty damn cool, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but no other lines with those guys. There was there were only a certain number of people that I talked to. You know, I was in scenes with them. I was in.
Yeah, like, but you never said anything.
I was on screen
them.
With them, but I wasn't. But I didn't. There was no exchange.
Oh, that's so wild to think about. Yeah,
yeah. You start
it's so
looking
true,
for
though.
It. And listen, tell me honestly, honest to God. I mean, that's my recollection. If you ever come across.
I'll let you know.
Let me know because from my vantage point right now, I have nothing. I got nothing.
Interesting.
So we have three favorite Walter moments that people have pointed out to us.
Oh yeah.
And we'll go through those and then we're gonna have a really fun exercise.
You mean like was it like people sent in their Walter moments and you just
Instagram.
Which ones kind of like seem to be the most?
Correct. The ones that stood out to them. Number one, which is also probably mine, which is your interview in Heroes.
Yep.
to this day, like one of my favorite like comedic moments because of just the dryness of the delivery of your whole like, and then I say locked. To mix things up. To switch it up a bit.
Switch it up. Oh.
Yeah.
Are we just talking about this clip or are you showing it?
I'm not showing it. No, okay. No, we're just talking about it.
Okay. Okay. So do you want me to do like,
that's yeah, like, you got any comments on that one?
It's actually, I would have to say that scene is my favorite scene from 10 years of Stargate because For maybe the reasons that you wouldn't think. First of all, Rob Cooper wrote that episode. And when I read it, first of all, I was really kind of chuffed that Walter was being included in the archival footage you know, that Saul Rubinek's character was gathering for, you know, for the government archives, mm-hmm. right? So, of course, it's a great premise, and it's a great device. It's a great storytelling device to let people in on the other characters, because they have mm-hmm. to sort of talk about themselves and what, you know, being on that, being with SG-1 and all that kind of stuff. So that, I mean, in terms of a writing kind of device, script device sort of thing, it was pretty primo, right? Mm-hmm. But then they then I discovered that they included me, and I was like, no way, really? So then I read the script and I was like, okay, I'm in heaven. Because first of all, Rob Cooper kind of said it like it was, but you could tell that they were kind of taking the piss out of Walter. They were, mm-hmm.
Like in a good way.
In a good way. They were having fun with Walter's job and who Walter was. And mm-hmm. I will tell you that I don't think until I acted in that scene that nobody else had seen that part of Walter. Like, I hadn't played him that way.
Right? Yeah.
So mm-hmm. you can imagine when Gary Jones, the actor, thinks, oh, it's cool that I'm being included in this episode to that degree.
Mm-hmm.
Now take it a step further and imagine what Walter feels like going, wow, okay, mm-hmm. all right. And, you know, he's all kind of puffed up mm-hmm. thinking, okay, this is great. I'm on film. And like many people, okay, in the outside of the business, it's all theoretical until they say action.
Mm-hmm.
And the second they say, you know, he's sitting there, Saul Rubinek's right there, the video camera's set up, they've got a guy there operating that. Then they've got the real cameras and Andy Makita, the director, is behind. And I just played it, hopefully, like the minute he goes, Saul goes, okay, so go ahead. And then it hits me. Oh my God, I'm on camera. What? So I played it kind of, you know, I was trying to be like sort of calm and like, you know, but I felt really super self-conscious. Walter did. And stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, well, you know, do it like this and shove my one coated and kind of, and I think that Walter was realizing as he was talking that he didn't have much. It's like, oh shit. Like, he kind of went, oh yeah, this is my job. Like, this is kind of all I do, but he hadn't verbalized it yet. So mm-hmm. for me, the joy and the fun was in talking like that with this thought process going on inside Walter's head. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm talking and I'm about to run out of things to say. And well, we're getting to the end of my sentence very shortly because I've got nothing else to back up why I'm here, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And that's why he says, you know, and then I say, Chevron 7, you know, just to shake things up a bit. And and if you, okay, it's so funny. And I swear to God, Andy Makita, who's a good buddy of mine, one of my favorite directors on Stargate, he was so, Andy's like the loveliest guy, really fun guy. He didn't know I was going to play it like that. He just told me what the setup was, and they kind of trusted me enough at that point within the show to go, you know, you'll do something good, you know,
you'll do something,
right? And in that show, you cannot overplay the comedy, you can't be big, you can't be over the top. It's a certain style and a certain tone of comedy mm-hmm. that you have to suss out pretty quickly, because if you can't, you realize, like, there's funny lines in the show, but if you can't deliver them in a way that's tonally consistent with mm-hmm. the show, they'd be like, it'll be jarring.
Yeah.
So I had to actually talk in a kind of a, like a deliver it in a comedic way that was believable mm-hmm. and yet comedic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I chose to play it. And I could see out of the corner of my eye, Andy Makita was doubled over and he was biting his neck. He was like,
That's so good.
He was like trying to be like out of sight, but of course he's like right there. Mm-hmm. And I have to, and I'm talking to Saul Rubinek, but I'm glancing at the camera, which is what everybody does. They're mm-hmm. like, they're mm-hmm. like yeah. you know, do I need to look into the camera kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And I loved it when he says something like, oh, okay, all right, and what else? And I go, oh, that's pretty much my job. Like that's the end. It was like, oh, damn you, Saul, you asked that one question too many. You could have just ended it there, but now you've forced my hand.
Yeah.
And I think I go on about something like, oh, they like to know that there's a human on the other side, a human connection or something like that. But ladies, when you go back and look at that scene, okay, mm-hmm. revisit that scene, there is a techie over my shoulder.
Ooh.
And she was she was there all the time. I even forget her name.
So good. It's so good.
Forget her name. When I say something like, you know, I like to shake things, you know, say Chevron 7 to shake things up a bit. She's like working with somebody and she just goes like this. Gives me this look like, did Walter just say that? And to me, that look really says so much about my relationship with the other techies. You know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
die, of course, and they have to, I was a, you know, chief master sergeant and everything. But, you know, they're all like in the coffee room going, can I see what he did today? You know.
This guy.
Yeah. So her look was not scripted.
Oh, it's so good.
I love it.
It's okay, I gotta rewatch it.
Yeah, that's another one I pulled specifically. If anybody's listening to this, if you go to the Companion and you watch Gay Tech 101, it's a joy to behold, and it's a huge part of it is all of those looks. I pulled all of those clips for Gay Tech so people can watch them. It's so funny.
And you can
her
imagine.
Look is golden. It's just golden.
And you have to know. Get this, Matt, because you don't really think about this. Because you're watching me in the scene, she does that look. I only saw that look when I saw the show. I didn't know she did that look. Remember, I'm looking at the Saul Rubinek,
right.
looking at the camera. She's over my shoulder. I wouldn't, and it's just a look. So I'm like, oh my God, when I saw that, I mm-hmm. lost it. I thought that is one of the funniest, perfectly timed looks that just says so much. I thought it was a genius move on her part, and it made me
so good. Yeah.
And I never saw it until the finished product.
That's amazing.
There are so many aspects of that two-parter that beyond the drama of, you know, Dr. Frazier dying or whatever, but but there are just so many parts of that that are just golden. And this is why when people ask me my favorite episodes of Stargate SG-1, I'm like, Heroes, part one and two, hands down. Hands down, Heroes Part 1 and 2.
And I think there's even another line in the other episode where I'm walking him through the gate room, and he goes, what's this thing? And I go, last word, we play Space Invaders. Kidding. And
he's yes!
Like, he doesn't, he's just looking at me like, what is this guy trying, like, does this guy think he's like Mr. Stand-Up Comic? Like, you know? But again, that line was written for me, and it allowed me to give another side of Walter to when people are sort of focused on him.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thank Rob Cooper for writing that episode. I would never take offense. You know, mm-hmm. I just embraced it. I just ate it up. I was like, Rob, this is like the funniest thing ever. I cannot wait to act this out.
God, it was so great. Okay, I can't wait to rewatch that.
Yeah.
So yeah. the second Walter moment that we have was from 2001, the episode where Walter is running the museum.
Yeah.
In the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the second one that people talked about. So I know based on what you've said in previous interactions that was when Walter became Walter, right? Yes. Yeah.
No, that was when Norman became Walter.
Norman mm-hmm. became Walter. Yes. My apologies. Yes.
That's okay. And you're thinking of the episode 2010.
Is it 2010 or 2001?
It's 2010.
Yeah, that's when
it's 2010. Right?
Okay, so that's my bad.
Yeah, it's 2010.
Type the wrong one in there.
That's okay. But so yes, I was. They found numerous things to do with my character along the way, and there was one episode where everybody's ranks were changed, and mm-hmm. the colonel became the general, became the colonel, and of course. I read the scripts and they're telling me what the premise is, especially in this one that I'm referring to right now, where I go, Richard Dean is the general and General Hammond is the colonel. And
they
flip around and I go to him, what about me? What rank do I? They go, no, you're the same. they go, nothing happens to you. You're the same. And I go, yeah, but everybody else's rank has changed. And they go, yeah, but you're just the same rank. And I go, oh my God. I was always thinking that they were going to do this great, you know, when it was like a crazy concept episode that was really going to affect my character. And I was like, nah, you're the same. Or, you know, when one episode when the super soldier came in and killed everybody. And Peter DeLuise was directing that. And, you know, he says the super soldier comes in, everybody's up working, and then he just kills everybody. And I go, okay, so what do I do? What am I doing? He goes, you're just sitting down. I go, I'm still in my chair? He's like, yeah. And I go, I don't even get out of my chair. I go, I hear firing. And he goes, and I go, I don't even turn around? He goes, no, you turn around, and he'll kill you in your chair. So that's the kind of thing that was always going on, and so in this episode, like 2010, of course it's in the future, they show up, the Stargate is like a tourist attraction, and I'm the tour guide. I walk, so got the script all memorized, everything, they walk in, and we have a vague kind of, we sort of are like, hey, don't I know you, kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
they come in. And I'm in a suit, and I look at him, and I go, Colonel? Like, He looks at me. He looks at me. And he goes, Walter? and I've often said, he delivered my name. The line delivery was like he was on horse tranquilizers. He goes, Walter? And in that moment, you're in the scene. I can't cut the scene because you just can't, as the actor, you just got to keep going.
Yeah.
My mind now is on my lines, and in the script, there's no Walter.
Wow.
Just made that up. He just pulled it out of his ass and just said, Walter. And I went, yeah. Yeah. Part of me, like my brain's like Rolodexing like mad. I'm thinking, is there somebody behind me named Walter that I have missed in the script? Like, is there somebody? And I don't want to turn around, but I'm thinking, who's he talking to? He's looking at me. I guess he's talking to me. Did I change my name in the year 2010? So I just say, yes. We do the scene. Everything's fine. And they're like, okay, you know, cut, moving on. You know, we're going to the next scene. And they run up to him. They go, Rick, yeah, listen, you know, the scene was good and everything, but Gary's character's name's not Walter. And he goes, well, it is now. And he just leaves them hanging like dirty laundry. It's like, they're like, oh, okay. Because he was the star, the executive producer. But more importantly, he didn't want to shoot a scene again.
No.
He's like, well, I'm not shooting the scene again. So his name's Walter because of that. So now I'm Norman Walter Davis. And it just like from every scene forward, that's in the script. and they just added it because Rick gave me that name.
And he didn't want to give you any other name.
No. Nope, and just they were like, okay, now you're Walter. Sorry, Gary, you're going to be Walter. I was like, what? I'm Norman. Yeah, but you know.
Norman. Yeah, but you're Walter.
You're Walter. I'm thinking, what other show could you do that on where it's on for so many years and one of the other actors, not the writers, Mm-hmm. Not the producers. They don't go, oh, you know what? I think it's time for a name change. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The actor.
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. he does, and then because of his stature in the show, doesn't want to shoot the scene again. So they're stuck now mm-hmm. naming me Walter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that was hilarious to me. I was like, what world is this? Like the television world.
Mm-hmm.
And just further to that, just I think just to sort of, you know, wrap up the whole name thing. I, you know, so I, my last name was Davis, and then it got changed to Harriman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, where did Harriman come from? Like, I was even wondering. And it turns out when I talked to the script supervisor, it turns out that I was in a scene, a very, very short, quick scene with Don mm-hmm. S. Davis, who was from Missouri. So he talked like this. Well, I'm Don S. Davis from Missouri. Like, he changed his accent. Just sounded like he was, every line he was gargling, you mm-hmm. know? And his line was, because I was in the Air Force,
mm-hmm.
the line was, open the iris, airman. Airman, because
mm-hmm.
I can call somebody in the Air Force an airman.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was like, okay, it's in the script. So he gets in and he's standing behind me. He's like, open the iris, airman. And they're like, Don, can we take that again? And Don Davis, God rest his soul. He never, Don, I love Don to bits. He never had this. He always thought if they had to shoot a scene again, he always thought it was his fault. What'd I do? Did I do something wrong? Would I stand wrong? And they're like, no, Don, you were good. Oh, okay. It wasn't me. Like, he always thought it was him every time. So they're like, Don, can we just shoot that again? He's like, is everything okay? And they're like, yeah. They didn't want to bug him, right? So
yeah,
every line delivery was the same. Open the eyes. Action. Open the eyes, Herman. And they'd be like, and I could kind of hear, like, man, it doesn't sound like airman. It sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they got Don to shoot that like 5 times.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
And they finally said, okay, moving on. And they went, it's easier to change his name to Harriman.
Wow.
Than get Don to say the word airman.
I mean,
that is how
fair.
I got that name, because Don could not pronounce airman. So thank you, Rick. Thank you, Don.
Gary.
That I became, you know, Walter Harriman.
Gary, you should honestly hear what, like, part of our podcast when we do episode reviews is we do script readings occasionally of important parts in the show. And Christine and I generally trade back and forth with General Hammond's lines. Being this southern midwestern sort of mashup mm-hmm. of a sound, and yeah, it's rough to try to recreate that accent. Yeah,
when I first met Don on set, they said, okay, you know, we were all intrigued. They're going, okay, so that, you know, this is Don. It's like I'd seen Don at auditions around town. I kind of knew who mm-hmm. he was, but I never had any. I wasn't really in any shows with Don. But everybody sort of knew Don because he was like larger than life, big kind mm-hmm. of like belly on him, he had a massive mm-hmm. arm, and he had that accent, but he was a total lovely guy, real gentleman. But when he met me on the show, when we finally got like officially introduced, we shook hands and he basically fused two of the knuckles on my hand. And just grips it. It was like somebody put my hand inside of like a hydraulic stamper or something.
Wow.
And he just grips it. And I'm like, oh my God. He goes, oh. And this was his line. I never forget. He goes, I'm Don S. Davis. I'm 235 pounds of romp and stomp and Missouri bullshit.
Wow.
That was Don's intro to me.
You can't beat that.
This is gonna be.
I mean, as someone who grew up in Missouri and St. Louis, I approve of that approach and that introduction. That was so good.
It was so good. And Don was a walking comedy act. Like, you didn't off off screen. He would come, we would come into work. We'd always check with each other, me and Don, because like, are you working in this next episode? And he'd say, yeah, I'm in the next episode. Yeah, I'm in the next episode. I'm probably in the next episode. Or he'd ask me, have you seen the script? Are you in the next episode? That probably means I'm in the next episode. So, Don, I mean, it was like so like, you know, people just don't think about that in the world of acting.
No,
you're in, I'm in. If I'm in, you're in. You know, whatever, right?
Oh, but, so wonderful.
Don used to come to work and yeah, would have me crying, laughing, just telling me about his life. It was like one of those guys where everything would go wrong trying to like use his photocopier at home and like things like that. You go, oh, you won't believe what happened. I go, Don, chef's kiss. Yeah, it was always like his stories were like just chef's kiss, but it was like stupid stuff that only Don couldn't like get or understand. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, he was just so
sweet, funny man.
That way. Love that.
So funny. He killed me. Yeah.
Oh, nice. My gosh. I love that.
So I have one question, because this was one that this was one Walter moment that came from an Instagram comment that I think I've seen before, but it is from a deleted scene that people comment about. It's from the episode Threads in eighth season.
Yeah.
And it's a moment where Walter comes in and Sam and Jack and I think some other people are there, and Walter goes, there's an urgent call from Pete. It's urgent. And for some reason it has stuck with people.
I've never seen this.
I don't know if you even remember it. I think it's one of those that maybe a lot of people haven't seen. So I have seen it. And the funny thing about it is that I wish it were in that episode, because it is really funny. Because Gary, you come in and you're like, there's an urgent call from Pete, who was the love interest for Sam for, you know, that season.
Boo, tomato, tomato, boo.
Boo, tomato, tomato, boo. We don't like Pete, but we like who played him and everything.
Yeah.
But like Walter comes in, it's an urgent call from Pete. It's urgent.
What does that just mean? I don't get it.
I don't know. I think it was this like funny moment that people have seen since. But it was not included in the actual episode, but people loved it. And it was like to the point where like they wish it were actually included in the episode. Wow. And I don't expect you to remember it, Gary. But I did find it really amusing that somebody commented about it, because it just does seem like a very Walter based moment. On like the ball moments and everything like that. It seemed like a very, there's an urgent call from Pete. It's urgent. Like that sort of like vibe with it.
I would say if I can, I don't even remember it.
Like, I'm sure not. No. Yeah.
Do I? Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
But I would say that you could, it's funny that you, it's funny that you sort of equate it to the same kind of moment as the ball moment.
It does. That's what it feels like. Yeah.
It was like those lines those things that I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
As a chief master sergeant, they were sort of out of my wheelhouse in terms of my job, you know, like with the general going, go, you know, oh, Ball's, Sir Ball's here. Ball is alive. He's like, oh, I'm busy. Go stall, you know, stretch. And I'm like, what? Oh, not chat with the guy?
Right.
And it's not the kind of thing that Walter would think that he had to, that it was part of his job responsibility. And I would think that
Walter shouldn't be intercepting calls from Pete either. Yeah,
no,
of course.
No,
yeah,
like, you know, it's an urgent call from Pete. It's urgent.
Right.
You know, I would probably deliver it like that. Like, you know, read into it. I hate doing this. I don't want to do it, but apparently I've got to tell you it's urgent. So I would have to say it in a kind of a way.
Honestly, like, yeah, I think that's, if I remember that outtake correctly, that's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
And
that's that's how I would have delivered it. You know,
I would have loved to have seen Pete. That. Yeah.
I would imagine that it would be like, there's an urgent call from Pete, and probably she would not have registered
or
acted upon it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That, which would have meant that I would have said, it's urgent.
Yeah.
Kind of like, thing, right? Like, come on. Like,
you know, can you get me out of this situation?
I think I would have loved them to have included that in that episode because it would have been a really nice, like comedic relief moment in that episode. Yeah.
But that's what I mean about the style and tone of comedy. Like you can't do it over the top, but you can deliver it in a way that you go, oh my God, that's hilarious because he did. You can tell what I would want to convey is that I did not want to be giving this news.
Right. Yeah.
Why am I the one doing this?
No, it's not your job.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love it. Right. I love it.
Yes.
All right. We want to get into this ChatGPT thing. Do you, Gary, do you know what ChatGPT is?
Yeah, barely.
Barely. All right. I'm going to give you
the dictionary. Think of a caveman looking at the moon for the first time.
All right.
And yes.
That's where I'm at with ChatGPT.
You and me. Fair enough. Same.
Okay. I've got the two of them on board because of the companion. We've been doing a lot with ChatGPT. But I will give you the dictionary definition of ChatGPT, which is it's an AI chatbot developed by OpenAI. The chatbot has a language-based model that the developer fine-tunes for human interactions in a conversational manner. It's a simulated chatbot primarily designed for customer service. People use it for various other purposes too, though. These range from writing essays to drafting business plans to generating code. But we're not going to use it for any of that right now.
I have to tell you that longstanding writing partner, he's very curious about things like this, right? I'm less so. Like he's always saying to me, you should check this out, man. You should like, it's the new thing. Mm-hmm. You should. And I'm like, oh, I don't really care. I don't have time. I can't be bought. And so he's like, no, you need to know about this, whatever. And so we're writing a Christmas movie together. And two of the main characters, he did this thing where he just out of the blue sent me images of two of the characters. And I knew when they arrived, when I saw them, mm-hmm. I knew who they were. And I was like, oh, cool. Where'd you get those? Like thinking Google images, and he goes, no, ChatGPT. I just gave it a couple of prompts. And this is what they came up with in like 3 seconds. I was like, what? So that's what he got. Yeah, he goes, yeah. Then if I hadn't known that from my writing partner, I got a 22-year-old son. And we were talking the other day and he goes, Dad, have you ever heard of ChatGPT? And I was like, yes, I have. Like the word on the street.
Why, yes. The
youngsters, I was like, yeah, I know what that is. And he goes, he tells me that a buddy of his who had done a bunch of landscaping work, I think he wanted a job on a golf course and he used ChatGPT to write his letter.
Yep.
Fantastic.
He goes, yeah, I wrote it in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And I go, how'd it go? He goes, you got the job.
That's wild.
Like, oh my God. He goes, that's nuts. He goes, and he was telling me about the whole thing about schools and universities trying to figure out who's plagiarizing them, where and then ChatGPT, like, how can you tell? Then they have to come up with a program that sniffs that out.
Yep.
And then other people supersede that with a program that like sort of nullifies the sniffer outer.
Right.
I was like, this is
wild.
Yeah, it's wild.
So anyway, that's the degree to which I know about it because I've seen some images and my own son has told me about his friends using it to get jobs. So
I have used it for my own work to help me come up with research for events that we're doing, things like that. Obviously, I don't want to use it to completely plagiarize an essay or something like that. But it really does a good job in pulling together information for you. Instead of me doing 30 Google searches, I can do one ChatGPT ask and it dumps a whole bunch of sources for me. And that's really great.
Right.
We're not using it for that tonight, though. No. We're using it to tell some funny Stargate bedtime stories. And yeah. The three that we have lined up all involve Walter.
Okay.
So I have one. We're doing it real time. I have not generated these ahead of time. So I'm going to have Sarah read us this prompt while I'm having ChatGPT generate it for us. So I'm going to share my screen here, and I'm going to tell it to generate this prompt. And Sarah, if you could just read this prompt for us.
So tell me a story about how Norman Walter Davis Harriman from Stargate SG-1 is accused of identity theft because he has so many names. SG-1 are sent to investigate his past to see who exactly he is and how he has so many names. They uncover a dark secret from his past. Make it funny.
All right. So it's still generating.
Oh my
God. You have to tell it to make it funny if you want a comedic response.
Oh my good Lord.
So it's still spitting out a story. What we're gonna do is we're gonna I don't know, can you read those words, Gary? If you can't, we can read it for you. But what we'll do is we'll take turns reading paragraph.
Once upon a time,
okay,
in a top secret facility known as Stargate Command, there was a man named Norman Walter Davis Harriman. He was a vital man. Oh, it's just disappeared.
Oh, you're like, hang on. Let it finish. And then I'll scroll back up. Don't worry.
Oh my gosh. Okay, there we go.
No, okay. It like did a whole. No, it's still going.
Nope,
God. It's still going. This is ChatGPT-4. If anybody knows ChatGPT, who's out there, there are different versions. GPT-4 is the newest one.
Yeah, that's because ChatGPT-3 was crap.
Yeah, exactly. Is it done? No.
Oh my goodness. Tell it to stop.
I can't.
Go forever.
No, it's almost done from that day on. We're at the end. Okay, now we're done.
Okay.
All right. Gary, would you like to start with the first paragraph? Can you read it? If you can't, that's fine. We can do it.
No, I can't. It's just like, I got to make this. How can I make this?
You want to make it full screen?
Yeah. How do I do that?
The green button, top left, green button.
Top left, what?
Green button.
The green button. What?
Do you have a green button on the top left? I have a green button. If you don't, we'll read it.
Oh, the green button. Oh, that you mean?
Yeah, it'll take you full screen.
Okay. Once upon a time in a top secret facility known as Stargate Command, there was a man named Norman Walter Davis Harriman. He was a vital member of the team, responsible for making sure that everything ran smoothly whenever SG-1 embarked on their daring missions through the Stargate. Norman, however, had an unusual secret. He had an astonishing number of names. From time to time, his colleagues would find yet another name attached to his records. Some called him the Chameleon, others the Name Whisperer. But the mystery surrounding his ever-growing list of names.
All right, Sarah, pick it up.
Yeah. One day, General Hammond called in the SG-1 team to discuss a new mission. SG-1, we have a new assignment for you, he announced. It seems as though our very own Norman Walter Davis Harriman has been accused of identity theft. We need you to investigate his past and find out who he really is and how he got so many names.
Christina, read the next two.
Got it.
The
team members exchanged puzzled glances, but they accepted the mission. After all, they were no strangers to bizarre occurrences. Oh, okay. You can't scroll on me like that.
Sorry, I'm scrolling. I'm sorry. I'm trying to help you.
As they delved into Norman's past, they began to uncover a string of odd coincidences. Everywhere they looked, they found names that seemed to be linked to him. In one instance, they discovered a legendary pizza chef from Italy named Giancarlo Luigi Fascini, who bore a striking resemblance to Norman. In another, they found an award-winning dog whisperer from Australia named Bruce Dundee Harriman, whose face was eerily similar to Norman's.
SG-1's investigations led them to a small village in the mountains of Eastern Europe. According to the locals, there was an old legend about a man who could take on any name he wished. This man, it was said, was born with a rare gift of nameomancy, the mystical art of manipulating names. Gary, pick it up.
As they dug deeper, they discovered that this man, now known as Walter, had been using his nameomancy to help people throughout history, from crafting the perfect name for a newborn child to helping a struggling artist find their perfect pen name. Norman had used his powers for good.
Sarah.
Okay.
Yeah, Sarah.
However, they also learned that Norman had accidentally unleashed a dark secret during one of his name-changing escapades. In his youth, he had once tried to assume the name of a powerful and ancient sorcerer, Zanzibar the Magnificent. Unbeknownst to him, the name carried a curse that anyone who assumed the name would also inherit the sorcerer's mischievous, troublemaking spirit.
Hold on, I'm scrolling. There we go.
Okay, as SG-1 pieced together the puzzle, they realized that Norman's multiple names were the result of the curse trying to free itself from his body. The curse was what caused the accusations of identity theft, and the more names Norman accumulated, the more powerful the curse became.
Wait. Oh my God. Okay, I'm going to read the next two and then Gary can finish us. Okay. Armed with this knowledge, SG-1 returned to Stargate Command and confronted Norman. They told him about the curse and together they hatched a plan to remove it once and for all. With the help of a renowned nemomancer, they performed a ritual that exorcised the spirit of Zanzibar the Magnificent from Norman's body. The curse was lifted and Norman's name-shifting abilities returned to their original benevolent state.
From that day on, Norman Walter Davis Harriman was known by only one name, but his reputation as the name whisperer lived on. And as for SG-1, they couldn't help but chuckle at the absurdity of the mission they had just completed. Because sometimes, even the most serious of adventures can have a funny side.
What was that?
That was wild. I didn't.
Zanzibar, like, what are we?
I don't even know what to say.
Chat GPT.
It's my scope of, like,
wild.
Oh my God.
I think it's because wild. It was left open ended to be like they uncover a dark secret and they just fill in, like, whatever.
Yeah.
That's so wild.
I mean, the whole thing about, like, they together they performed a ritual. It was like, okay, you know, it's wrapping it up pretty easy,
yeah.
You know, because there were no real struggles in
this.
No. But you know what I mean? Like, it didn't get really dark or, you know, like nobody had to really overcome anything. So, I mean, they wrapped it up pretty fast, but for the most part, I mean, it was definitely something to build on, you know?
So. Absolutely. Wow. All right. I'm going to do one. I'm going to do mine, Sarah. And then, okay. We'll go from there. This is wild, though. That was like, I had never seen something quite like that. Can somebody read the tell me like the cat one while I'm putting this in?
Yes. All right. So tell me a story about how Walter Harriman from Stargate SG-1 finally gets to go through the gate, but it ends in disaster as he's followed back through by a giant cat. Make it funny.
So it's still going here. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it won't be quite as long as that last one.
Right.
Because that was wild.
Yeah, because then I'd like to end it. Gary, if you can come up with a prompt
Gary,
for that
obviously
one.
What we would like is for you to improv one on the spot if you can for us.
Have you mean fun with it. Prompt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once we do this one, yeah.
It's
even made a planet out of feline, the word. So we'll see what happens here. It's gonna be interesting. All right, here, look, I'm gonna start. Sarah, go ahead and start. We're gonna go down the line here.
All right. Once upon a time, deep within the secret military complex known as Stargate Command, there lived a man named Walter Harriman. For years, he had watched the brave members of SG-1 venture through the Stargate, exploring distant worlds and galaxies. And he had always wondered what it would be like to step through the shimmering portal himself.
Christina.
Can you keep reading that, Sarah?
Yep. Oh.
It's at the top. It's at the very
top. One day,
top.
As Walter was going through his duties, General Hammond approached him with an unexpected offer. Walter, he said, I've noticed your dedication and hard work over the years, and I think it's time you had a chance to experience what it was like to go through the Stargate.
Walter was ecstatic. He could hardly believe that his dream was finally coming true. After a brief training session, he donned his newly issued SG uniform and joined SG-1 on a mission to a distant planet known as Felinia 7. Felinia 7. Upon arrival, they found themselves in a lush, verdant world filled with forest and rolling hills. The most extraordinary thing about Felinia 7, however, was its inhabitants' enormous sentient cats that walked on their hind legs and communicated through a series of purrs, meows, and telepathic messages.
Gary.
Walter was both fascinated and slightly terrified by these creatures, but he bravely followed SG-1 as they conducted their mission Unfortunately, as they were about to leave, Walter accidentally stepped on the tail of one of the giant cats. The cat let out a blood-curdling yowl, and in a panic, Walter dashed back through the Stargate with the rest of the team, not realizing that the offended feline was in hot pursuit. When they arrived back at Stargate Command, Walter thought he had escaped the wrath of the giant cat, but as he turned to thank General Hammond for the opportunity to hear a familiar yowl echoing through the gate room, he glanced back and saw the furious feline leap through the Stargate, its eyes locked on him.
Wow. The massive cat chased Walter through the corridors of the SGC as personnel scattered in every direction, desperately trying to avoid the angry creature. The scene was like something straight out of a Tom and Jerry cartoon, with Walter playing the part of a very unlucky mouse. SG-1 realized they needed to save Walter and contain the giant cat, quickly hatched a plan. They knew the cats, no matter what their size, were susceptible to the allure of a simple toy. So they fashioned a makeshift cat toy out of a broom handle, some string, and a rubber ball.
As the giant cat continued in its pursuit of Walter, Colonel O'Neill burst into the hallway, brandishing the improvised toy. He waved it back and forth, capturing the cat's attention. With one final swipe, the cat pounced on the toy, finally ceasing its chase.
With the cat... Oh, go ahead. Gary, why don't you finish it? Gary, you want to finish the last three?
With the cat momentarily distracted, the team hastily contacted the inhabitants of Felinia 7 to explain the situation. The Felinians, understanding the misunderstanding, sent a delegation to retrieve their wayward feline friend and offered their apologies for the chaos it had caused. After the cat had been returned to its homeworld, Walter couldn't help but laugh at the absurdity of his first and wild and likely last trip through the Stargate. He had always dreamed of an adventure, but he never could have imagined it would have involved an enormous angry cat chasing him through the halls of Stargate Command. From that day forward, whenever anyone at SGC needed a little levity, they'd recall the tale of Walter's feline fiasco, and Walter, while grateful for the experience, was more than content to return to his duties on Earth, far away from any giant, vengeful cats. Sweet. That's amazing.
Love it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it so much. That was wild. I know we are running like super tight on time, Gary. Rebecca, do you have anything? Do we want to try like see if Gary, do you want to think of a prompt we can circle back and send it to you just so we can generate it at some point?
I did think of a prompt. And
okay.
I do have to go, but I'd love to see what it writes. So I basically say to it, do I have to write this in or say it?
No, I will type it. If you say it, I'll type it.
Oh, okay. So it's basically, tell me a story about how Walter finally drums up the courage to ask Sam Carter on a date. But gets turned down.
Well, okay, I'm gonna have to say how Walter from Stargate SG-1, because otherwise the AI could be a little weird. All right, we ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Hopefully it won't be that long. The first ones we did like the other day were not nearly that long. So it's actually giving us a really long story this time.
Did one where they found a McDonald's off world. And then they had to go to the other one was they had to go to Nordstrom to get Teal'c the wardrobe. It was super fun. They were building a Stargate in the back room. I think Ball was working with Jamie Nordstrom to build a Stargate out of extra material. Mayborn
was there too or something.
Yeah, Gary, we'll read this. We're going to read this one. If you can very graciously close the iris for us after this, then you're good to go. All right. Sarah, start it while it's still doing
it. Once upon a time at Stargate Command, Walter Harriman, the diligent technician, was working tirelessly to ensure the smooth operation of the base. Over the years, he had developed a secret crush on the brilliant astrophysicist and member of SG-1, Major Samantha Carter. Walter had always admired her intelligence, courage, and dedication to the team.
All right. Day after day, Walter would watch Sam from afar, dreaming of the day he would finally muster the courage to ask her on a date. He would imagine them having candlelit dinners, stargazing, and discussing quantum physics together. But despite his fantasies, he never quite found the nerve to approach her.
Gary, if you want to do the next one.
One day, Walter received some unexpected encouragement from Colonel Jack O'Neill, who had noticed Walter's not-so-subtle glances in Sam's direction. "You know, Walter," Jack said, "you'll never know if she's interested unless you ask her out. What have you got to lose?" With Jack's words echoing in his mind, Walter finally decided it was time to take a leap of faith. He spent days preparing for the perfect moment, rehearsing what he would say, and even picking out a new outfit for the occasion.
Oh, God.
Go ahead, Gary. You can read it.
The day finally arrived, and Walter's heart raced as he approached Sam in the mess hall. She was sitting alone, her eyes focused on a scientific journal. Walter took a deep breath and walked over to her table. "Major Carter," he began nervously, his voice cracking slightly. "I was wondering if maybe you'd like to go out on a date with me sometime?" Sam looked up from her journal, clearly surprised by the unexpected question. She paused for a moment, searching for the right words to let Walter down gently. Walter. "I really appreciate the offer, and I think you're a great person, but I'm not really looking to date anyone right now. My work and my commitment to SG1 take up most of my time and wouldn't want to start something I couldn't give my all to." Walter, his face a mixture of disappointment and relief, managed a small smile. "I understand, Major," he replied. "Thank you for being honest with me." As he walked away from the table, Walter couldn't help but feel a sense of pride. Even though he'd been turned down, he had finally faced his fear and asked Sam out. In a way, he felt as though he'd accomplished his own personal mission. In the days that followed, Walter and Sam continued to work together amicably, their relationship unaltered by his brave attempt. And as Walter returned to his duties as Stargate Command, he realized that sometimes taking a chance and being true to oneself could be its own reward.
Oh, I love it. Wild.
That wraps up any thoughts that I had about Walter would have had a relationship or anything to do with Sam. I mean, that it's pretty honest. That's a great.
It's so wild. AI.
Wow. Like, bloody hell.
All right, Gary.
That was great.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We're so happy to have you.
I had a great time. You ladies, that was really lovely. Thank you.
We love having you. No, we do have a tradition here on Three Fries Short, which is the guest that's here. Well, generally, every episode, somebody closes the iris. So when we have a guest on the show, we like to have the guest close the iris. So if you could, Gary,
how do I do that?
Give us your best, however you want to, closing of the iris.
It's just a command, just to say whatever you would script to tell someone to close the iris. Yeah, like imagine you're yelling at the team to close the iris.
Okay. Closing the iris. Iris closed.